This is the Faith Debate, a theological roundtable gab fest with the Mix Master as the master of ceremonies and the notorious Triple B, the big bridge builder. Can we build it? Yes, we can. The Faith Debate is a free-for-all forum.
Hoo-ah!
Where faith community leaders wrestle over the truth.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
In less than 30 minutes, learn more about what really matters than others learn in a month.
Ooh, how convenient.
Are you ready for a clash of ideas? Are you ready for the sound of freedom?
Let's get ready to rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah, yeah!
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, the Faith Debate Master of Ceremonies, Troy Skinner.
You got a moron here.
And in this corner, weighing in as a pastor, teacher, and founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in the local community.
Ooh, mama.
The notorious big bridge builder, John Switzer.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Pastor James L. Pittman Jr. is the lead under-shepherd for the congregation of New Hope Community Church in Palatine, Illinois. That's actually my old stomping grounds. I grew up in a whole bunch of towns in that area of suburban Chicago. And Pastor Pittman, he knows our neck of the woods pretty well, as it turns out, himself having studied pre-med at Howard University in Washington, D.C. But geography, that's not why he's on today's edition of the Faith Debate. Theology is why he's joining us by telephone. And it's an issue of such great importance that it is actually causing church splits, denominational division. Longtime friendships are being called into question even. But before we get into all of that, we're going to take a moment to let you know more about this particular minister of the gospel. So we're going to welcome Pastor James Pittman to the Faith Debate. Thanks for taking time to be with us, Pastor.
Thank you for having me.
Now, because you're not part of our local community at the moment, and people have no opportunity to know who you are, what you're all about, I thought it'd be a good idea for us to talk about your background. How is it you came into being in leadership in the church? You know, what brought you to the place where you became a pastor?
Well, I was doing my undergrad, as you said, at there in Northwest D.C., and following in the footsteps of my mother in the medical profession. She was a nursing professor. And I had gone to Howard in college, about the sophomore year, at the end of my sophomore year. I recognized there's a disease much more deadly than cancer. And it was sin. And so at that point, I had made a decision between my sophomore, it's been a while now, sophomore, junior year, I no longer wanted to study medicine. I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. At one point, I wanted to go and get a PhD in biology and be like Ken Ham. But that didn't work out. I just got tired of, my heart wasn't in it, I guess is the better way for it. And then, so somewhere in my senior year, I decided I was going to go into ministry, and so I wanted to go and do some graduate work out here in Chicago. And so I went to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and even still was not set on being a pastor. I wanted to work alongside with churches. I wanted to strengthen the churches that existed through training with evangelism and discipleship. But I had a friend of mine, a mentor actually, and I asked him, because he was heavy into training, and I asked him, I says, why are you doing church planting when you have all these other churches that could be shored up, that could be strengthened in evangelism and discipleship? And he said something at the time I didn't quite agree with him. He said this. He says, James, because I've learned sometimes it's easier to give birth than it is to resurrect the dead. And I didn't believe him. But at this point now, some 20-plus years later, he's right. A lot of churches at this point, once you get a culture, it's very, very difficult to change it. If your church isn't built upon evangelism, someone coming alongside years later, it's very difficult to do, let's put it that way. So then I decided, you know what, that's not going to work. Let me go into ministry and the pastorate at this point. And so shortly after that, I decided to go in the direction of pastoring a church. Then, thus, I wound up here in New Hope Community Church in Palatine, Illinois.
Now, if I understood your story correctly, did you came to be, identify yourself as a Christian while you were in school?
That's also another good question. No, I believe I was saved around 14, 15, but I grew up in such a horrid church, literally. There were fist fights on Sunday morning, okay? That was the church I grew up in. So I understood the gospel, and I did accept Christ, but I was never trained, never discipled. Got to Howard, I would debate and I would argue the Christian view in the dormitories, but my life did not match up with the scriptures and living holy. It wasn't until my sophomore year that I learned that Christianity wasn't something you just intellectually agreed with on Sunday morning. It was to be lived out 7 days a week. And at that point, I can say I started to read the scriptures and be discipled. At the time, I was being discipled by a navigator. And I brought my concerns to him, and I said, you know what? Do I need to get baptized again? And he said, no. From what he understood, I'd always identified as a Christian, and I did. And I understood the gospel. I just didn't live it out 7 days a week. And so I can say my walk really took off my sophomore year. So,
gotcha. Now, you've mentioned a couple of things that people who are familiar with certain ministries and people within the church might know. You mentioned Ken Ham. He's famous for his teaching and advocacy for creationism and the Genesis narrative and that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then Navigator Ministries, like an evangelical evangelism organization. Is that what that is?
It's a discipleship organization. Discipleship? They focus in on discipleship and discipling believers, most notably on college campuses. So I was involved in the Navigators and also a Campus Crusade.
Gotcha. Now, the church you were going to when you were younger and there were the fist fights taking place, we should have a few of those going on the Faith Debate, don't you think? Spice things up, John?
Yeah.
Was that a Baptist church or what sort
yes,
of church?
It was.
Okay. So was that why you ended up with a Southern Baptist congregation that you're pastoring now, or was there some decision-making going into that?
That was a predominantly African-American church, which was identified, I'm pretty sure, with the National Baptist Association. National Baptist, yeah.
Okay. And so you're at New Hope, and
correct.
It's a Southern Baptist Convention church. How
correct.
How was that decision made to join the convention?
Well, I chose in seminary. So I come to Illinois. I moved here in the fall of 95. Started school in January of 96. And so toward the end of my studies, about 99 or so, I started to look for a denomination to align with. The National Baptist at that point had a national director that, the wife burned down the house of the mistress, and there was some embezzlement. And so I could not go along that route with that denomination, and they kept them in place. So I could not go along with that denomination. And so it came down to the Evangelical Free, which Trinity is a part of, and the Southern Baptist. And at that time, in the late 90s, if you remember, the Southern Baptists at that point were putting out resolutions to counteract what was going on in the culture. And that was the time when I think they did the boycott of Disney, because Disney had started to go liberal in the area of homosexuality. And so I said, you know what, I want to align with that denomination, that one right there, that's actually engaging the culture with the gospel. And so toward the last year of my seminary degree, I started to affiliate with the Southern Baptist Convention locally here in the Chicago area.
Now, you distanced yourself or chose not to go align yourself with the National Baptist because of some irregularities, let's put it that way.
Yes, if you want to put it that way.
And the Evangelical Free has a church that has a traditional conservative reputation. The Southern Baptists have a conservative reputation. Mm-hmm. And you advocating for pushing back against the liberalism on the social and political sphere with what's going on at Disney tells me that you have a traditional and conservative orientation yourself. So what's that like for you? Because this is the radio, people can't necessarily tell, but you're a black preacher in suburban Chicago. What's that like being a conservative with the color of skin that you have in that environment?
What's it like? It's funny because I hear that it doesn't go well for most. Now, I have not run into personal attacks in my presence to my face. I don't know if it's because I'm 6 feet, 230 pounds, give or take a few pounds. Maybe that's the case. I don't know, but most people don't attack me in my presence. So I honestly have not had anyone come up and challenge me. Now on the social media realm, that's a different story, right? You get a lot of people who would say a lot of things online that they would never say in person. But it was a culture shock coming to the northwest suburbs of Chicago. There was a learning curve because I recognized that conservatives, and this when I moved up here, this was probably the first time I had actually lived in a predominantly white culture, and there was a definite learning curve coming here. So yeah, there were some things I had to learn, but as far as the animosity that you see on the television of being black and being conservative, to be honest, I personally have not run into that.
What's the ethnic makeup of your congregation?
It is predominantly white, but we have a little bit of everything: Japanese, Korean, Filipino, Mexican, South African. we've got it all, but it is predominantly Anglo.
And not that it matters, I'm just trying to get a picture. What size congregation? How many people, I don't know what it's like now with COVID, and I'm not sure how you guys are handling that, but pre-COVID, how many people might gather on a Sunday?
Is it Christmas and Easter, or is it just regular Sunday? On a regular Sunday, we would have, between 30 and
50. Okay.
I'll take it. Depends. I mean, because at one point it was higher. We had some, shall we say, church issues that brought it lower, between 30 and 40. Now we're running anywhere between 50 and 60. Normally, if everyone comes here, let's say if it's a Christmas, you're maybe 100.
Gotcha. So, okay, so it's a family-oriented church where you're actually legitimately, boots on the ground, pastoring these people, investing in their lives personally and that sort of a thing. You're very contra-narrative right now, right? You're a black conservative outside of Chicago. Yeah. Well, that doesn't make any sense to most people. Right? And you're a black pastor in a predominantly white part of suburban Chicago, and you've got a predominantly white congregation.
Correct.
Which, I mean, that's impossible because everybody who's white is racist, so I'm not sure how that happened.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Now, you mentioned you have, it's a relatively smallish congregation, and yet incredibly diverse. Is that, did you do something to help orchestrate that coming about, or it just happened that way?
Expository preaching.
So the word God drew who he wanted to draw, and they looked how they look.
And they looked how they looked. And I can tell you, it's an interesting story another time. Having an African-American with an MDiv from Trinity, I have been offered several positions at quote-unquote mega churches, multi-sites. But I had gotten to a point in my life to where I recognized the challenges in that, and I've turned them down. I don't want it. This is where I want to be. And the idea of leaving my congregation, and even though we are small, in walking distance, there's a church, you may have heard of it, called Harvest Bible Chapel, who just had challenges with their head pastor. And driving distance, within 15 minutes, there's another little church called Willow Creek Community Church. So we are sandwiched between two large churches, not just in the Chicago area, but the country.
Right, world famous, practically. Bill Hybels' church, Willow Creek, it was, huge, and Lee Strobel came out of that church, and he's been very influential with his Case for books, Case for Christ, Case for Creator, Case for Easter, that sort of thing,
Correct.
Now, do you ever run with those guys? Are they part of are you part of a pastoral, ministerial group or anything where you rub elbows with those guys and have any influence into their lives?
No. Probably don't want to say too much in this interview, but I, in the mid-90s, I had friends who did had interns at a lot of churches in the area, and I was privileged enough that we would come together and we would talk, particularly my first year before I was married, in dorms, and we would share notes of what was going on in our local church. And let's just say from those conversations, I made a decision to stay clear of them.
Gotcha.
What has happened recently is just things coming to the light. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, but in fairness, I think, you know, we've got about 10 minutes, a little bit less than 10 minutes left in today's episode. And you just spoke right before we went on the show, spoke for a few minutes with John Schweitzer. And you and I only spoke one other time before together. So I'm going to give you a quick snapshot of where I'm coming from on things, and then maybe John can do the same thing of where a very short version of the same kind of things that you are sharing with us. So I grew up a denominational mutt, attended a whole bunch of different kinds of churches, including a Christian cult while I was growing up.
A Christian cult?
Yeah, I was my family was involved in the Worldwide Church of God and Herbert W. Armstrong and all that mess. So, Armstrongism, stay away from it with a 10-foot pole. But anyway, I came out of that very confused. And so for about a decade, I was very disillusioned and was very occasional in attending churches. And I wasn't trusting anybody. And then I finally, you know, God did a work and got some clarity in my thinking. And my wife got recommitted to her faith. And so for the last, 20, 25 years or so, we've been pretty faithfully committed to the gospel message and biblical Christianity and that sort of thing. I got my MDiv from Reformed Theological Seminary, the D.C. campus. And what you said about easier to give birth than to resurrect the dead resonated a little bit with me. I've had two opportunities to try to resurrect the dead, and that didn't go so well for me. And so now I'm actually trying to give birth, and I'm beginning a church plant in my living room right now. So that's kind of where I am. And John and I have been doing this show together now. By the way, I'm not sure of the exact date. It could be today. It might be within the next couple of weeks. Exactly our 16th anniversary. So we're entering our 17th year of doing the Frederick Faith Debate.
That'll explain all the gray hair that you got.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought it was you causing the gray hair. Well, is that what you meant?
Yes.
I thought you meant the show in general. Gotcha. Yeah. And so I'll let John give you his background. He actually knows a little bit about where you are now, too, the Chicago area.
Yeah. So I was, like I said before, I was out in the Chicago area for 3 years when I right after I graduated from seminary. My story, I guess, starts with my grandfather planted 13 Baptist churches across northern United States. They were the General Association of Regular Baptists. My mom and dad met at Baptist Bible Seminary, and when I was about 7 or 8, they moved away from the Baptist groups because my dad felt it was biblically untenable to say that the gifts of the Spirit had truly ceased. And so we ended up being a part of some significant local charismatic groups, which ended up, because of my dad's commitment to rigor with Scripture, bringing us into close contact with some Messianic Jewish communities that they started a high school together with them and a seminary. So after graduating from Oral Roberts University and doing a bunch of youth missions in a number of places around the world, I went to Messianic Jewish Seminary, got my master's of biblical, and then that's when we moved out to Chicago for a couple of years and served in a church in Aurora, Illinois, and then came back here and planted a church in right here in Frederick. And during that time, just ended up developing some amazing relationships with a number of pastors that were on the conservative side of the scriptures, and just came to see that there was a role for churches to work together in key places, and for the sake of the gospel, serving the poor, and so I'm in that space with my wife doing some things here in Frederick that help to draw the community together in key places. But Troy and I have been doing this show for 16 years, clarifying where churches can work together and where they can't work together. and where churches can work with the secular world and where they can't work with the secular world, you know, trying to ask hard questions about how beliefs naturally tie to what we can and can't do with people. And, you know, why not be honest about those things instead of trying to hide those things? And so that's kind of been the heart of this show for many years, and which is part of the reason we want to talk with you, because there seems to be some shifts going on in the Southern Baptist Convention that you've been at the heart of. And so I guess we'll be getting into that here in the next show, because I think we're coming up on the end of things here with this show.
Yeah, and so I wanted to lay the foundation, because when something is the reason I wanted to have you on, so the listener understands. I shared this with you already, James, but so the listener understands. There is a kind of a cold civil war going on inside of denominations right now, and inside of congregations. And some churches, I've heard, they've lost 30-40% of their congregation has left over the kinds of things we're going to be talking about on next week's show. Some people are leaving or threatening to leave their denomination. It's tied in with politics, because, well, let's face it, the gospel is a political message. We're talking about a king and his kingdom, and so it's overtly a political message. And so it's going to influence the political dialogue that Christians have with the world around them. And James, you wouldn't know this, but people who listen to this show might know. I also host a quote-unquote secular show, if you will, a local issues and politics show that airs on Saturdays called Frederick's Forum from noon till 1. And I've been doing that the last few months, and I've had some people who know me pretty well, but I guess they didn't know me as well as I thought. And they're labeling me, or labeling me as, oh, you're like far right. You're like an alt-righter. You're like way out there, radical right. And, you know, it's interesting. Anybody who's to the right of you is radical, right? And anybody who's to the left of you is a radical left. I mean, I understand that's how people, they have their self-perspective.
Yeah.
But all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring consistent biblical, theological outlook on the world around me. And our world has shifted so far away from that that now a biblical perspective is considered radical right.
Yeah. By some people.
By people who would call themselves conservative. But, you know.
Or that would call themselves conservative Christian.
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think they would.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that I don't, if you press them, they would admit. Are you talking about Easter or Christmas?
Certainly those definitions have shifted.
Exactly.
So much. So who knows what means what anymore.
So there's this big fight going on, and the Southern Baptist Convention is feeling it big time right now. And James is really impacted by that. And he said something publicly almost a year ago now that got a lot of people's attention within the denomination. And we're going to tell that story. How's that for a cliffhanger on next week's Faith Debate Show? You can find us online at WFMD.com. Keyword faith gets you there. If you go there, you're going to find an easy link to all the podcasts and a teaser for what the following week's show is going to be all about. You can also follow us on Facebook, and you can follow me personally on Facebook, on Parler, on MeWe. I'm on all those places. If you follow me, I'll follow you. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from right about now. God bless.